how in the world do you begin weaning your child? And when can you safely start? In this episode, we talk in detail about factors to consider for night weaning and day weaning because they're different, as well as my personal yet tried and true method of how to organize and approach the topic with your child in a way that respects their emotions and respects the milk in your breasts so that you're less risk for clogged ducts or mastitis. We discuss weaning babies versus toddlers, whether or not you need to give them replacement milk, and explain the signs and symptoms of post-weaning depression, which unfortunately is rarely talked about. We also talk about trying to conceive while breastfeeding or throughout weaning and share our maybe unpopular opinions about the optimal age gaps between children. Here we go.
Welcome to Healthy as a Mother, the podcast for becoming and being a mother, with your co-hosts, Dr. Leah Gordon and Dr. Morgan McDermott, two naturopathic doctors who get it. Each week, we teach you how to be the healthiest mother you can be, from fertility and preconception to pregnancy and birth prep, through postpartum and throughout motherhood, empowering you with the natural health guidance and education you're not getting elsewhere so you can confidently navigate the broken system at large.
The real, the raw, the untalked about.
And remember, this information is not intended to diagnose, treat, or manage any disease. Always consult with your doctor before making any changes.
Let's dive in and talk all about weaning. Dr. Morgan, again, anything that has to do with boobs and milk is really your jam. So let's hop in.
Who knew the girl that didn't get boobs till she was like 20 talks about boobs all the time? Okay. So yeah, we get questions about this a lot and I get it because nobody really, it's like there's a lot of attention that is focused on the beginning of breastfeeding because it's, you know, hello, a very steep learning curve and newborns are tricky to learn how to nurse. But then once things get rolling and kind of you chug along and then now all of a sudden your baby's however old and you're wanting to stop and nobody really has much guidance about that. So this is our perspective about weaning and it's just sort of a general overview, but just know that there's a million different ways you can go about this and there's nothing wrong. The only thing I would say that's maybe wrong is doing it too quickly and then giving yourself mastitis.
Yeah.
And it's not that it's wrong. It's just that you need to know that that's a risk, you know? So, okay. So some just basic facts, and this might blow some of your minds, but we need to really understand this, that the natural human weaning age is actually between 2 years old and 7 years old.
Whoa.
Yeah. It's a big range and it's an older kid than what we see in society. But if you go to different parts of the world, you're going to see this, you're going to see older preschool age 5 year olds still having some milk here and there. And it's not like nursing a newborn. So we need to really remember that when you're in that second year or the third year of nursing, like, you know, between 1 and 2 or between 2 and 3, some children, now I will say some kids those ages do feel like they nurse like newborns. They just are very attached to mom. They love their milk, you know, and it takes a couple of seconds. They sometimes just suckle 3-4 times and then they run away again. And, you know, that can be really infuriating, but it's not with the same level of responsibility and time in your day as it is nursing like a 4-month-old.
Yeah.
So we really need to remember that you're not nursing your 3-year-old every hour most of the time. And I'm saying that most of the time because there's going to be some moms out there that are like, yeah, I did, because of the attitudes and the wants and wishes of a very strong-willed toddler, not because they actually need it, you know?
Yes, right.
Yes. But, you know, nursing is an amazing tool when you're traveling, when they're sick, for comfort, for all sorts of different things. And we have to remember that it's not just nutrition-based. So especially in those later years, it's often not for nutrition. Although there is a lot of like immune system factors that are still being transferred between baby to or mom to baby, stem cells, all, I mean, it is definitely beneficial that way, but it's not at all the same if we were to compare the two between when it's the primary nutrition of a 0 to 12-month-old, you know, and onwards. It's a lot more of that comfort, the security, the safety, the feeling attached to you, having that secure attachment and, you know, just to soothe and abate the big emotions that they're going through as they transition into the world. So
yeah,
that is kind of what we're seeing anthropologically, which means throughout human history and then in some certain other areas of the world still. But, you know, in this country, our breastfeeding rates are very much lower. And there's a very small statistic. I think it's only 40% of infants are nursed past 6 months. So, and that is something that there's a lot of people that are trying to change. So that we can give the moms the support that they need and the education that they maybe are lacking, or it's usually about support though. It's about going back to work and not having pumping access or different things or so many factors. But so some people will, so that's kind of just some history. And then some people want to know like, well, when should I wean or when can I wean? When is like the earliest? And obviously you're going to do whatever you're going to do. But if we had to make some general recommendations that we think are good guidelines that protect, that find the balance between not too long, but also protect infant normal developmental expectations, I would call them expectations and not just needs or wants. It's like, what does a baby come out expecting? And there's a really good book. It was written in the 60s, so it's not politically correct. And we just need to kind of keep that in mind when you're reading it. It's from an anthropologist and it's called The Continuum Concept. Her name is Jean Leadoff.
Okay.
Or Jane, Jean or Jane. And it's really good. And it's sort of the attachment parenting base manual. And she just goes and she travels around with these tribes and notes what she sees and how they mother and how they do all these different things. And so anyway, that's kind of where I get that terminology for expectations. An infant comes out and, you know, they expect to be put on your chest or to be held close. Like a baby mouse comes out and expects to be able to find a dark, hidden space to be and to eat nuts and berries and seeds. You know, a baby shark comes out expecting to be born into water. So like we have certain species derived biological needs that are not up for social or political discussion or debate. It is just the way that it is. Yeah. Now we have to intersect this with modern reality and difficulties. And I understand that, but I also think that we need to be respecting as a baseline, the bottom of the pyramid, the root from which we make all of our decisions, which is what is the biological and physiological expectation and norm? And then how can we meet that the best we can and move forward from that? So given all of that.
I love that you know so much about anthropological data.
Well, I love that. It was my minor in college.
I know. I remember that.
I was there. And I took one class and I was hooked. And I, at the time, was still wanting to be a vet. A veterinarian. And so I was like, why am I taking all these human anthropology classes? But I loved it. And I just, yeah, I think it's so, because, you know, to me, it makes so much sense. So people will always find what resonates with them. But anyways, okay. So I would say, let's just talk about night weaning first, and then we'll talk about full-time or daytime, you know, weaning. Most of the time people wean at night first before they wean during the daytime.
Right.
So, and night weaning, I understand, is difficult because you want to sleep.
Right. And
I would say the biological norm of what, like, I would say up to 12 months, after 12 months, rather. So, when your baby is about a year, unless they're just easy and chilling, and when I say easy, I don't mean like an easy baby, you know, that whole terminology that, like, oh, they're a good baby and whatever. But some babies, like my son, did not care. I fed him in the middle of the night for my own boobs to not get mastitis. He could have slept all night, though. He was just that way. Some are like that. And then some are maybe a little bit, you know, there's a spectrum. So it's like some are just inherently like that on their own. Some are more malleable with the sleep, you know, learning or sleep training methods. And so they can be kind of gently guided and they'll respond really well, but maybe they would nurse. Then there's going to be some that are like pretty obstinate and they're not going to comply with your rules. Then there's going to be the ones that almost need to sleep with a nipple in their mouth the entire night, you know? So your baby is going to come out and you cannot control your baby. You can do the best that you can to live your life in cohesion with them. But know that if you try to crush them into a mold of what you want, you will be miserable. They will be miserable. And at some point, hopefully you'll learn that lesson. Take it from me. I don't want anyone to think that you can have complete control over your kid because you just can't.
Right.
It's a very humbling experience, motherhood. So anyways, I would say ideally we're not weaning at nighttime a baby that's less than 12 months old, but really the bare minimum I would say is 6 months. It is inappropriate.
When you say nighttime, like my daughter was kind of sleeping through the night, you know, probably by like 8 months or so. When you say nighttime weaning, I know in some of the books they consider a night sleep of 5 hour stretches, but you know, does that mean like you kind of tell me what that means by night weaning, like how long are you actually going? Because I probably didn't feed a full night's, you know, I probably didn't feed her fully in the night consistently after like 8 months or so on her own accord.
Right. Cause she was just fine with that. Right.
Until like she had a sleep regression.
Okay, that's another thing. Or they get sick or you travel and then now you're nursing again at night or you're doing whatever you need to do. Yes. And so that's a good question. And that is kind of a confusing thing. What I'm saying is nighttime is like a 12 hour, but you're right. That isn't considered nighttime for like a full night stretch sometimes is less than that. I don't really have a hard line that I'm thinking about. Good question though. So I guess what I mean is that when a baby wakes up in the middle of the night from sleep.
Yeah.
And
waking you up from sleep.
Yes. And like, do you still need to nurse them or not? And so right. I think some babies won't, but if your baby, I guess here's what I'm trying to say. If your baby seems like they want and need that feed, it's very physiologically normal. It's biological infant normal sleep to want a feed up until about 12 months. And then it is still normal for them to still want that feed. But I think at that point, and solids are introduced, we as the parents can kind of reprioritize our own sleep if we need to do that without feeling like it's kind of cutting into their needs. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, so that makes total sense.
Yeah. So, and it's a gray area too, because like what you're saying is, you know, 8-9 months, it's like, okay, well, I mean, that's great. And she was always a good sleeper. She was, she was like that. And I could have done that with my son very early on. I probably could have nightmared him at maybe 5 or 6 months. He just was, he sucked his thumb. He was so fat. He did not care about milk. Like he didn't need it. But again, so we just, this is kind of a guideline that if your baby is needing it, I just also really want to normalize, because some people don't know, or some people have families or they live in cultures that are very like, oh my gosh, you're still feeding your baby at night, and they get a lot of flack from it. And it's so odd. And I'm just here to say, no, you're actually very, very normal. Mm-hmm. And we have to remember too, and we talked a little bit about co-sleeping in the last episode, the postpartum depression and anxiety episode. And neither of us co-slept, but we also both recognize that that would be the normal biological infant expectation is to sleep along with your parents and not sleep into like, you know, some other room in the hut, because they would just die, right? Like we know that. But this is one of those intersections where you sort of make a different choice. And it's like, well, how can I sleep the best that I can, show up as the best parent I can? And my baby's doing well with it. They're not crying it out in the other room and, you know, vomiting from crying so hard. Okay, cool. Then like we can do that. So it's all a very gray spectrum, and you have to be able to make these micro adjustments. Then things like are going to happen, which is what you said about, you know, sleep regressions, or they get sick, or you travel. So sometimes weaning is a multi-month process because you think you did it and then you have to go back. And and I think some people also maybe in the very in a sort of type A mindset or a perfectionist type mindset might think that they're doing something wrong if that happens, and you're not doing anything wrong. You are just responding to your baby.
Yes.
And the situation. So it's okay. You're not wrong for going back. You may not want to go back, but you know what? Sometimes it's just easiest. It's easiest to take one step back, two steps forward, you know, whatever it is, and get through this period of time. You know, they have some kind of a food illness and they're vomiting all the time. Like, you need to nurse your baby. It's okay. Like you'll get through it. It's not going to be forever. We have to always keep that, you know, my favorite quote, it's everything's temporary for motherhood. So there's a lot of back and forth. Nothing is going to be super clear, unfortunately. And for the people like you and I think we are like this. We want clarity. We want to know the truth. We want to know the answer. We want to know what's the multiple choice answer that's correct. And, you know, we've had to give up a lot of that sort of, yearning in this process, and just trust that it's all going to work out the best that it can. So I really want to normalize that for people. It's very normal for that to occur. And then now with like full-time weaning as well, I would say the goal is 1 year of primary breast milk. Although the WHO, so the World Health Organization, and many other organizations say the minimum is 2 years for a full weaning. So now that might be once a day. That might be one nursing per 24 hours for up to 2 years. And I would say that's actually really normal, like one or two times a day for a 2 or 3 year old or something in that age range. Although some, like I keep mentioning, but I just really want to say it because some people are going to be rolling their eyes like, yeah, right. My 2 year old wants to nurse like 8 times a day. And that's just how some kids are. None of mine have been like that. I've always offered the breast, and I've always kind of wanted that experience, although I probably really don't, because it seems like it's very, you know, intrusive and invasive on your personal space. But I have lots of friends whose babies just run up to them, rip their shirt down, have a little sip, and then they run off. And that's totally normal. Yes, is it difficult to manage that in a modern society, and you're out and about in public, and some people give you dirty looks, and some people judge you because they think that you're weird, that you haven't weaned your toddler yet? Like, that is a cultural thing we need to change. That is mm-hmm. nothing to do with you and your baby. You're not wrong for that. You're not unusual. You're not a creep. You're not trying to sexualize this process. You're not trying to show your boobs to the man on the bench next door. Like, it's so weird, the things that we say and do. And, mm-hmm. you know, when we're not thinking, it's like, what? That's literally the reason why we have boobs, is so we can nurse babies. Like, that is the reason.
I know.
It's so funny. Crazy. So, I mean, I would say minimums. Let's wait until, okay, actually, if I could, bare minimum, let's not nightween up and let's not nightween between, or I sorry, before 6 months. Mm-hmm. But my more ideal is not nightween before 12 months, unless the baby is really just, you're following their cues. But of mm-hmm. course, it's a gray area on either side. And then really, this one is like a pretty hard mark, is let's not fully wean until 12 months, ideally. Mm-hmm. Now, at some point, you know, a lot of people will combo feed. So they're feeding some breast milk and some formula. And like, that is obviously the way that it needs to be for whatever low supply issues or something has gone on. Still though, your breast milk has a lot of benefit, even if it's one feeding a day mm-hmm. or up to that 12 month mark or beyond. If you can keep going, if you're fine with that, and you know, your breast will slowly make less and less and less milk. But if you have enough for, okay, I can feed the baby one time in the morning, the rest of the day is on formula, there is still so much benefit in that. So don't think that it's negligible just because it's once or it's mm-hmm. a couple ounces. It's honestly huge. So I just want to say that too, in case you're enjoying it or, you know, want to give as much breast milk as possible. So that's kind of the long answer to when can you wean a baby. And obviously mm-hmm. people will do it however they want, but it's more than just nutrition, is my mm-hmm. point, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so then there's the people who are exclusively pumping. And so obviously for them, it is just nutrition because the baby's not latching and maybe the baby is sucking on a pacifier. Sucking is, or their fingers or something. Sucking is a biological infant need. It is crucial to establishing, maintaining their craniosacral rhythm, their vagal input to the roof of their palate. Their tongue should be up there anytime there's not something in their mouth that they're sucking on. And that gives a lot of vagus nerve input, which is the calming parasympathetic nervous system branch of our nervous system that really keeps us kind of like flowing and mm-hmm. not in that fight or flight. We don't want to be in that all the time. That's sort of an emergency, something we need to set off, go into when we need to, and then we sort of come back to balance, or it tones down a little bit. It's never just flipping one or the other. It's always a little bit of a balance, right? But
yeah. Now, what would you say to the woman who either out of necessity or choice weans sooner than that, you know, whether they just are over breastfeeding or they, I know a lot of women who have postpartum depression and anxiety, sometimes they're told to wean. I don't know if that's the appropriate thing or not, but what do you say to that? Like if they're stressing out, being like, I'm not going to help my baby, or, you know, just having decisions around this
idea. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and so just to say this statistic again here too, postpartum depression and anxiety rates are actually much lower in breastfeeding women. And the longer that you breastfeed for, the lower your risk becomes still. So it's really bad advice, I think, in my opinion, mm-hmm. to use that unless it's the absolute worst case scenario. Now, there is something called DEMER, which I want to mention because I don't think we have on another podcast. It stands for dysphoric milk ejection reflex. So it's like D-MER. Mm-hmm. Dysphoric milk ejection reflex is not that common, but it is something that has to do with the way that oxytocin and dopamine interact in the brain when the letdown happens. Mm. And it makes you feel for a few seconds as your letdown is happening every single time you nurse your baby, this, like, it can be just absolute dread. It can be a rush of the most unbearable anxiety you've ever felt in your life. Mm. It's like a cascade of neurotransmitters going off wrong in your brain that feels really, really, really bad. And so a lot of the time people with DEMER will wean for that reason. Mm-hmm. They're like, I can't continue doing this. And pumping doesn't change it because it's every time you have a letdown. Mm-hmm. It's an inappropriate response of oxytocin and dopamine. So anyway, whether it's that, whether it's you just like can't handle it, you're getting mastitis. I mean, I thought about weaning my son, my first, much earlier than I wanted to. I was like, I don't know if I can do this because I just kept getting mastitis, you know? So there's choices that we have to make. Now, so you have to do whatever you're going to do with that. The baby will get formula. The baby needs mm-hmm. milk, right? Like the baby will still need milk. And until you can kind of maybe work with your doctor or a lactation consultant to figure out how their weight gain is going, what their signs and symptoms are, if they're getting enough, if they don't need to get a bottle of formula in the middle of the night, that is going to really depend on so many other factors you're going to have to figure out. So like say the 6-month old is now fully on formula, do we need to be waking up the six-month-old or responding to the six-month-old's wake-ups with a bottle? Mm-hmm. It's definitely going to depend on your baby. Some baby, I would say most of the time, yes, though. They need blood sugar regulation throughout the night. Mm-hmm. I know people are going to do it differently. Some people are like, oh, yeah, I followed the whatever. There's some book. I forget what it's called. But it really pushes baby sleeping through the night at 6 weeks.
Oh.
Very much against that idea.
Whoa.
But again, as we spoke about in a couple other episodes, motherhood is tricky. And on the outlier kind of sides of the spectrum, sometimes people need to make decisions that we would not agree with. Mm-hmm. But for them in that moment, it was too much. They were getting too far down into a hole and maybe were reaching a point of like suicidality or different things like that. And you need to do whatever you're going to do to stay there for your family and your child and mm-hmm. not hurt somebody, obviously. So just a little caveat there. I think that there's always room for sort of everything in the spectrum, but it wouldn't be anybody's advice in a professional medical sense to say that that would be ideal to wean that early. So anyway, I guess my answer to your question is just the baby will still need something.
Yeah.
It would be formula or donor milk. If you can get donor milk, which mm-hmm. is sometimes really accessible, you would be surprised at how many people have an oversupply and are just throwing away bags of milk because they're rotting in their freezer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or, you know, they're going away. So if we make calls for action, you reach out to a local breastfeeding support group or a lactation consultant who may know about these types of people, and you can get linked up with these women. And, you know, maybe it's just a couple of bags of breast milk here and there. It's not that mm-hmm. consistent. Again, like I said, it's so important. And actually, again, this is anecdotal, but my son was nursed by like 7 different people mm-hmm. because of how problematic our breastfeeding story was in the beginning.
Yeah.
And his immune system rules. Oh my gosh. It's also constitutionally more like my husband, but I have to wonder, you know, mm-hmm. one of the woman who, you know, primarily fed him for his first 3 weeks, it wasn't me. She was from Russia. So she had an entire life of different exposures, different antibody type levels for different stuff that she was passing to him, you know, gratefully. I was so excited about that.
Yeah.
So anyways, there is other options. If you don't want to do formula, you can get donor milk. And even if it's a bag here or there, I do think it's still beneficial. So
cool.
Okay. So now people are like, well, how do you wean? How do you even do that? All right. Mm-hmm. So I am very pro going slow because of a couple reasons. One, your breasts need to adjust. Mm-hmm. Your baby needs to adjust. It's a big transition, especially if your baby is in the catch-all sort of the normal standard deviation of babies who really, really like to nurse. Some mm-hmm. babies don't really care, like we said. Some babies are very attached. But most babies are somewhere in the middle where like it's still going to impact them mm-hmm. having less or being told no when they want it. So what I have suggested and what I've done with mine that's worked well, but again, there's so many different ways to do it, is to take wherever you're at. Say you have a 14-month-old and you're like, okay, I'm done with this. First, prioritize night weaning. Well, mm-hmm. how do you night wean? If you have a partner who's present, it's really helpful if they can take the brunt of the work for a few nights to separate you from this process mm-hmm. because it can be really challenging. You don't have to stop co-sleeping in order to night wean. It's more challenging for sure, but a mm-hmm. lot of people think that I don't want to get them out of my bed. I love the cuddles. I love the whole thing. And how are we going to do this? And da da da. And it's definitely more tricky. But I just want to say that real quick. You don't have to. So mm-hmm. some things I find helpful: getting your partner involved, having it be like a couple of nights that are going to be more difficult, right? Mm-hmm. You just need to stick to your guns. My big thing with parenting, although you have to be fluid with the sickness, the travel, the regressions, all of that, I think that when you put up a new boundary like that, if there's nothing going on that would supersede the boundary, like a sickness, then you really need to stick to the boundary. And you're very kind. You're mm-hmm. very kind about it. And you're very much expecting huge pushback.
Yes.
Yeah. And you're just going to be there and hold space for their emotions. So mm-hmm. maybe it's something like you're wearing a super tight sports bra and like a hoodie. So it's inaccessible mm-hmm. as much as possible. But then also you've prepped your child. So depending on their age, if they're old enough to understand different things. And I mean, I think that they actually are able to understand a lot more than we
so much. Oh my gosh. I did that with AV and it was amazing.
It's amazing. Yes. You tell them what's going to happen. Hey, we're not going to have milk. Like starting in like a week, we're not going to have milk at nighttime anymore. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. In like 3 days, we're not going to have milk at nighttime anymore. There's books that you can get. There's several books just on Amazon. Not like I want to keep supporting Amazon, but you know, whatever your local bookstore, type in like night weaning books. Mm-hmm. Or another option you can do if you don't want to buy something is you can just make a little, get some computer printer paper, write little stick figures. Mm-hmm. Johnny's milk goes night night, and the mm-hmm. milk comes up when the sun comes up, and mm-hmm. you make a little, staple it together, color it. Make it very simple, but it has their name in it, has your name, mm-hmm. whether you go by mama or something else, whatever. And maybe it tells a little story of like your bedtime routine and how it's going to be different now. And you're mm-hmm. just laying the groundwork of how, especially for the kids that are very attached, I think this method is super helpful. You may need to even be prepping them and talking about this for like up to a month before you do it.
Yeah.
Because some kids have a hard time with transitions like that. And it's just like, if you're going to look forward in the future, you can make yourself have a lot less suffering if we yeah. do that. So anyways, reading the books, prepping them, talking to them about it. And then when it comes time to do it and you're like, okay, tonight's the last night we're going to have milk at night. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then you like in the morning time, oh, that was so nice. I really loved having milk with you in the nighttime. And now when we go to bed, you are just going to sleep next to me. And if you wake up in the night, you're going to roll over and go back to sleep. That line, I tell my kids all the time, when you wake up in the night, you roll over and go back to sleep.
Yeah.
But my infants, and I swear, or my infants, I mean toddlers, whatever, but I feel like they really get it. It becomes ingrained in their subconscious. And then when they wake up in the night, they're like, wait, what am I supposed to do? Oh, I roll over and I go back to sleep.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's worth a shot at least. Mm-hmm. Like maybe it won't work for your kid. But yeah. So start with night weaning. I think that is the big kind of scary one for a lot of people. You can yeah. also in the middle of the night, they wake up and they're screaming and they're like, they want something and it's like a whole thing. You can offer some other type of drink or milk, water. If you're doing dairy, you can offer a type of a milk. I prefer raw milk. You could offer like an almond milk. You could, mm-hmm. you know, we did that with Gage. Remember we offered him some almond milk in the middle of the night. He took like one sip of it and was like, absolutely not. I want nothing to do with this. And so then he never asked for a different type of drink because he had mm-hmm. been saying, I'm thirsty, thirsty. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you do want to account for the fact that they might actually be thirsty. Offer them something. Also, another little tidbit or trick here is that to ensure that they have had enough food in the day. So depending yes. on their age, if they're even eating, like, you know, if you're night weaning a little baby, this is going to be a bit trickier, but, and you're probably going to want to offer a bottle or something. This is talking about breastfeeding weaning. You're going to want to offer something because they might actually truly be really hungry and mm-hmm. that's cruel to make them, you know, be hungry and that kind of a
right.
Nobody likes to go to bed hungry. So, high fat, high protein snacks right before bed, like a scoop of nut butter or a scoop of either just butter itself mm-hmm. or, you know, some nuts or some yogurt or something that's, really filling to just fill their little bellies. And then yes, in the night you might be giving them a cup of milk or something just mm-hmm. to kind of abate it. And most of the time that's only going to be a couple of nights and the kid's going to get over it and they're not going to want that anymore and they're just going to sleep.
Yeah. So, and I know with Avia, it was more of a comfort thing. She clearly was being very well fed because I started night weaning at probably 16 months?
Yeah, I don't remember. Gosh,
yeah,
it's been a really slow as old as she is.
I know. But I replaced, because we used to have milk before bed and then I'd put her down. And then I started singing You Are My Sunshine.
Oh.
And I told her, and it was a very, very consistent, obvious transition where I didn't consistently ever sing that song, but that became the new thing that we did at night. You Are My Sunshine. So consistent every single night before bed. And so if she did wake up in the middle of the night, I would sing that. And she used it. This is the same sleep cue and calming cue. Even now, if she's like having a meltdown or in the middle of the day, if I really need her to calm down, I just start singing it. And she immediately puts her fingers in her mouth, grabs her bunny and like goes into like sleep mode.
Ooh, yes. Oh my gosh. What a great idea.
It That's so brilliant. Crazy. So it's like
a replacement.
It's a sleep cue replacement.
Soothing thing. Yes. Mm-hmm. That is such a good idea. Wow.
But it's not like a different song every time. It's the same exact song. Yep. Every single night, every single time. And so it is like clockwork. It works so well.
And then you try not to use that song in other contexts.
Correct.
Probably.
I don't use it unless it's like a very, very serious. We need to calm you down because you're having a panic attack, which is not common, but it's usually only for going to sleep.
Wow. That's really cool. Good for you. That is like such an intuitive thing that makes total sense.
Yeah.
So yeah. And there is something to be said too. A lot of the sleep people will say, if you can change the way that they fall asleep, so maybe they're not falling asleep on the breast mm-hmm. because then when they wake up, yes. they're sort of going to expect that.
Correct. And I didn't ever have her fall asleep on the breast.
Yes, like for that night thing. You know, I mean, it's very normal for babies to fall asleep on the breast, like in other contexts. But when you're trying to night wean, it's definitely against your plan to do that. So it's maybe like have them either falling asleep from awake by you soothing them somehow or a partner or whatever. But it is ideal if they can go to sleep in some other way besides nursing on you, even if that's getting a bottle from somebody else. But not from nursing or even you. You giving them a bottle is different from the nursing on you when they're going to sleep, when you're trying to implement a new way throughout the night. So really good idea. Yes, maybe they wake up in the middle of the night and you sing a special song. You give them cuddles. That's the other thing is like sometimes people, you know, babies really get habituated into this. It's a very cuddly thing. And yeah, they have their little lovey and they're like rubbing it on their face while they're nursing and stuff. And you can say, we can have these cuddles in my lap on the couch. And you sometimes also really need to change up your location, your routine. If you always are nursing in the same chair, then you got to not be in that chair because the kid is going to want it then, you know?
That's exactly correct.
I've done that too. It makes sense, right? It's like you're creating a new habit. And if you were to be creating a new habit for yourself, say it was, and I'm not likening these two because they're nothing alike whatsoever, but just in terms of a very ingrained and thing that you might like, but like smoking cigarettes or something, if you're trying to stop yourself from smoking cigarettes, you need to not have the habit of like going and standing outside in that one spot that you've been doing that every time, you know, multiple times a day, or have those kinds of patterns where you were doing it in those spots. So it makes total sense that if we can help shake these things up for the kiddos, then it is helpful.
Yeah.
Also, sometimes women will go away for like a weekend. They'll leave. They'll just go to like a hotel for a couple nights and dad deals with it. And when they come back, it's probably a little bit difficult that first night, but sometimes not. And then you just say, oh yeah, no, we're not having milk anymore. I'm sorry. Like milkies go to bed at night. Like we're not doing this. Or you can even do that for full weaning too. So anyways, that's kind of my thing is let's start with a night weaning. Okay. So now let's say, let's pretend we've got that down. Baby's sleeping through the night or is waking up, but you're not nursing them. They're waking up and they're doing something else. You're soothing them somehow else. Okay. Then we need to organize our daytime feeds, which is really tricky for some people if your baby is just coming up and nursing constantly. Some other people though, you'll have it pretty like chunked out as, oh yeah, every 3 or 4 hours, that's when we have one, or it's first thing in the morning before and after each nap and then at nighttime. So that's what I like to say is let's get it into some kind of a pattern that's predictable for probably a couple of weeks. You need to be working on that organization. If it's already there, then great. You can hit the ground running to the next step. But it's typical, I would say. So say your baby's like a month or a year old or something. And it's like first thing in the morning, before and after each of those two naps, usually they're on two naps at that point. Although they will be transitioning to one at some point. And that's kind of tricky, but, and then before bed. So you're at like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You're like 6 feeds in the day or maybe 4 feeds in the day. Then you start to knock out those nap feeds. So one at a time. And you do that for like a week or 2 weeks, 10 days, something. And if you need to wean faster than this, for some reason, you totally can. You just need to be cognizant of your breasts and not get a clogged duct or mastitis. You might need to hand express or pump a little bit. Although if you pump, you're really going to not, your breasts are not going to be adjusting very much. They're still going to be making that output. Hand expression gets milk out without the same sort of feedback loops to your brain of that stimulation of the suck and the pull because you're just squeezing it out. You know what I'm saying? So that's ideal if we're trying to reduce the supply so that they can chill out. And hand expressing in the middle of the night too, when you night wean, you really might need to because you could be putting yourself at risk. And then some people are all fine though. Some people have no problems. And I don't understand that, but it does happen. There's also, you know, weaning tinctures and teas of herbs like thyme and sage and these kinds of drying herbs. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. Honestly, like it's not a foolproof foolproof method, but maybe if you're somebody with a major oversupply, it might be nice to
kind of. Or Vitex. Vitex reduces prolactin.
Oh, there you go. Yes, Vitex. And that could help you get your cycle back too if you were wanting to. And I'll talk about that in a second. But anyways, so we drop the night nap feeds first, one at a time. So now let's pretend we're in a scenario where you're just feeding morning and night, morning and night, morning and night. You keep that for, you know, a week to a couple of weeks. And then pick whichever one your baby is less attached to. Is it the morning one or the nighttime one? Whichever one they're less attached to, knock that one out first. So now you're only to the one that they're most attached to, which is like morning, and you're on morning. Now at this point, they are getting the picture. They're understanding that this is becoming a less and less often thing. And you know, you're still offering lots of love and cuddles and different things in those time periods when they say that they want milk, and you're still really sticking to your guns and holding your boundary and holding space for their feelings. You're not making them feel shame for it. You're not saying mean things to them. You're not ignoring them in their tantrums and their feelings. You're really validating it. And that's super tricky. And it's okay to hold a boundary like that. And they really, and they're crying at your feet and they really want milk. And you're like, oh my God, what do I do? I feel like I'm being abusive to my kid. You're not. You're not. You get down on their level. You look at them in the eyes. You hold them. You say, I see you. You really, really want milk. You want it so bad. You're screaming. You're so sad. Like, I see you. And I'm not going to give you milk. And that makes you really sad. And then you hold them and they cry and they kick and they scream. And eventually they'll come around and you can say, you know, we can go have some, if you're hungry, like, you know, you maybe offer a snack. We can go over here. Do you want to go on a walk with me? Do you want to go watch a show with me? Can I pick you up? Can I cuddle you? Can I sing a song? Whatever. You know, you kind of offer something else. You will get through it. And this is also a little microcosm to the macrocosm of your whole life with validating the emotions of children that are upset. And it's okay for them to be upset, you know? So the reason why, another reason why I want to go really slow here is there is something called post-weaning depression. And post-weaning depression is not talked about almost at all. And I wish it was, because some people are like, what is happening? And it can be very emotional. Weaning can be, without it tipping into the scale of post-weaning depression, it can still be sad because it's a big chapter closing and you may have loved nursing your baby. You loved those sweet cuddles and them looking in your eyes and smiling with your nipple in their mouth. It's like the sweetest thing in the whole world. Or maybe you hated nursing. I've been in both places, but either way, it's okay. It's all okay. But it can be really emotional. And so going slow, I think, offers us a little bit more time to adjust also for the child, right? But post-weaning depression is a legitimate thing. And it's because there is now a drop in prolactin and oxytocin, which are really good feel-good hormones. And now there's a rise happening back with estrogen. So it's like, think about, you know, premenstrual symptoms, you know, kind of coming back. And now right. You may not have had your cycle yet too. A lot of people don't get their cycle until they wean, or you might get it throughout this process of weaning, especially night weaning. Night weaning is usually what gets people to get their cycle back, I would say. Yeah. But some people, for some reason, they just don't stop. They won't get it until they completely stop weaning. They might be 18 months, 24 months postpartum.
Yeah.
And that does happen. And so there's a lot of stuff going on, but the post-weaning depression symptoms are really similar to a postpartum depression or anxiety symptoms. It's sadness, grief, anger, anxiety, emotional swings. It's much shorter lived though. It's usually only a period of a couple of weeks, depending on how fast you're doing the weaning. But this is another reason why slower weaning is going to ease off your experience of those hormone shifts so that you don't dip into this kind of place. So
yeah,
be aware of that. That's
something I know, and some women feel so good after they're done breastfeeding because breastfeeding was hard on their hormones, and some feel worse. Like, I feel amazing breastfeeding. I love it, probably because I tend toward higher estrogen and the prolactin helps keep me more in balance. So I am actually more balanced breastfeeding than not breastfeeding.
That
but
is
some
so
women are the opposite. So it's different for each person, and just to know that it's okay. But doing anything slow, I think, with your body is ideal.
Yeah, especially with hormone shifts. See, and I am the opposite. I can tell towards that end of that, like into that second year, like, I need to be done with this. I want to feel like myself again. I don't feel like myself when I'm raging on prolactin all the time. I just don't.
Yeah.
So, and that's okay. I mean, it's not like I'm super depressed the whole time. I'm just, there's like a layer of my energetic shift that once I do wean, I'm like, oh my gosh, now I'm like fully back. And like my libido, that's the thing. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, libido breastfeeding is just tanked.
I know.
And as soon as I wean, it's like, hello.
I know, that darn libido, that prolactin really drops
your
hormones. It
really does.
I mean, because it's a root cause of low libido, even in women who aren't breastfeeding. You can have inappropriately high prolactin, which is the hormone that makes breast milk. And it's a big root cause, especially post birth control and things like that, because birth control can increase prolactin too, weirdly.
Man, hormones are so interesting. Yeah,
I know.
I really have experienced a lot of these different sorts of shifts, and it's very obvious to me in my body. But you know, we also need to remember that breastfeeding is protective that way, so that your hormones are not raging, you're not cycling necessarily, because you need to be focused your reserves on the baby at hand, who is in front of you and alive right now. And sometimes when people get pregnant, their milk just dries up in an instant. It's really difficult to maintain nursing one baby and growing another baby, and then also having your own just resting metabolic needs for your body. So anyways, there's a reason for that, right? But so some people have asked me too about trying to conceive with breastfeeding or mm-hmm. trying to conceive right after weaning. And I want to talk about that in just a second. Let me just finish up the method of weaning and we'll get there. So when you're taking away that last feed, you know, take some pictures, have a little journal session, be very present to the moment because the last feed is a real dinger. Have you had a last feed with Avi yet?
No. Okay. I think we're going to do it when we get our kitten.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's right. The kitten's going to be.
But I did have Mike take a picture of me the other day just in case, because there's a few days that we've woken up. We have done exactly your method. You've been the best postpartum doula. You helped me with everything. And I, you know, weaned her in the night, weaned her in the nap. I got her to one nap because we started around 16 months. Then I stopped the nighttime bedtime feed, switched it with the song. We're now on a morning feed. I typically, Mike brings her into the bed in the morning and I feed her. And so if I get up and like go play with her in the living room or whatever, she just forgets that milk's even a thing and it doesn't happen that day. So there's been days, you know, either when I've been on a trip or when that has happened where we have no milk that day, but then other days she'll ask for it. And I've been telling her, and she responds very well to this, that, you know, do you want another baby, a sister or brother? You know, if we want a sibling, then I have to wean and we can't have any more milkies. And she seems to really understand that. And now with the kitty, we're getting a kitten in a week. I'm going to make a new routine with the cat where we wake up in the morning and do something with the kitty where that kind of replaces milkies. And it's like really sad, but I need it to detox, which we'll talk about, you know, later in another episode too. But absolutely. It is hard because I'm not making it to 2 years, you know, and a part of me feels bad for that. But
I know. And it's okay. You know, we need to just be like, yeah, well, sometimes there's other things going on and I want to say something about that 2 year gap. And okay, so here, let me just finish up the method really quick. I'm glad that that's helped for you though. The following this sort of pattern that your breasts have adjusted, you haven't had mm-hmm. any clogged ducts or anything, correct?
No, not at all.
Great. So anyways, the last one will be emotional. Just know that. Really try to stay really present for it. And also just pat yourself on the back for doing any level of breastfeeding that you have, because it's a crazy, crazy hard thing to do. Mm-hmm. So a quick question that I get often is, do I need to be giving my baby cow milk? Because that mm-hmm. is the cultural norm here. And the answer is no, absolutely not. You don't need to be giving, but I will say cups and cups of almond milk or oat milk, especially, absolutely not on the oat mm-hmm. milk, but almond milk, coconut milk, any of those kinds of nut milks are not adequate nutrition to be replacing anything mm-hmm. for a baby or a toddler. They are more just like an accessory drink for fun because you want to, but it's, or like I was saying in the middle of the night, maybe it's enough for a bit of glucose so that they're not hungry, mm-hmm. but we're not expecting those to be replacing any level of nutrition. So if you are weaning under the first year, you need to be replacing it with formula or donor mm-hmm. milk, because milk is the primary nutrition of a baby's from 0 to 12 months. Even if they're eating well, even if an 11 and a half month old is eating well, ideally they are getting some, they need to be getting something mm-hmm. as their primary nutrition as they're making this transition. So it could be cow milk if you want to. I prefer raw milk, because raw milk is a really different food, a living food with probiotics and enzymes that pasteurized milk does not have. And that is a controversial thing, but it really shouldn't be. If you look up any of the research, especially modern day raw milk situations are very clean, and there isn't mm-hmm. the issues of the bacteria that were killing people at one point. And, you know, there's a lot of big, scary, bad rap, but it doesn't make sense. I don't know. Anyway, I'm not going to go into that right now, but you can look at that later. And depending on how they're doing with food too. So, I mean, if your baby is really not eating food and you're wanting to breastfeed or wean them off of breast milk at 12 months, there are things called toddler formula, which if your baby's not eating food and you want to wean, totally legitimate scenario, that happens all the time. They need to be then put onto a toddler formula. Mm. Because if they're not getting enough calories throughout their food, you know, something has to provide them nutrition and sustenance. Mm-hmm. One tip that I love that has worked so well for patients, clients, and friends, and myself included, is the smoothie, the daily smoothie, is to make a jam-packed, and I'll write this recipe out in the show notes, mm-hmm. to make a jam-packed smoothie that covers many nutritional bases of fat and protein and carbohydrates, some greens, some powder, you know, it's this big, nice thing, and it tastes good. I mm-hmm. add juice to my smoothies. I know some people are going to be like, no sugar for the kids. And I just don't care. Yeah. If it's a conduit, if some good juice is a conduit to getting this all the other amazing ingredients into your kid.
Yeah.
Like, make it enjoyable. I also don't like to drink smoothies that taste like sludgy vegetable crap, you know? Yeah. So like, it's going to be hard for a kid to right. do that. So, but if your kid doesn't need the juice to drink the smoothie, then fine, do that. Great. But I also just don't want people to feel wrong for adding orange juice into their smoothie. Cause mm-hmm. I have met people like that. They're like, but what about the sugar? And I'm like, oh my goodness. Guys, we need to like keep things in the 10,000 foot view. So anyways, I'll write that down. But I think that what I have experienced is that toddler nutrition is really tricky anyways, because sometimes mm-hmm. they eat a lot and they eat great and they're not picky. And then other days you're like, you're going to die. How do you not eat anything? And it feels like, or they throw it all on the food or on mm-hmm. the floor and you're just about to rip your hair out. That's very normal. It's very common. They tend to do more of a, we eat like as adults about the same amount every day consistently. That is not the way the toddlers eat naturally, just by norm. They don't. They tend to kind of pack it in for a couple of days here or there. Then they're lighter. Sometimes it almost feels like nothing. Sometimes it feels like they must be going through a huge growth spurt. So
that's good to know, because Avi eats like that. Sometimes she'll eat more than Mike and I combined. And then other days it's like she eats a handful of sprouts before bed and nothing else. And I'm like,
I love that she eats sprouts.
Oh my God. She eats so good. Sprouts, olives, salmon, sauerkraut. Like
amazing.
Yesterday, she's like, more salad, please. More salad. Like, you're such a weird child. I love
you're
it.
You're a dream naturopathic baby.
She's a dream. She's literally a dream. We were so rewarded. Our journey was rewarded by like the cutest little baby ever.
Yes. I love that. You had so much difficulty in the beginning, and then now you're really reaping a just mm-hmm. like very enjoyable parenting experience, yes. which you totally deserve. So
thanks.
Yeah. Anyways. Okay. So, but if you can think about it and wrap your mind around it that like, and again, some days your kid won't even drink this smoothie, but you can try, mm-hmm. is that if they drink this one smoothie as like a meal replacement almost, I mean, obviously go ahead and offer other food as well, but it could act as a meal replacement. You can kind of ease your mind off of whatever happens else in the day. So that is how I've approached it with clients and patients. I'll put the recipe in the show notes and of course make little adjustments as you need based on your dietary situation. But I think that cow milk is not a necessary thing. And actually a lot of kids react poorly to it and it increases things like ear infections and snotty noses and congestion and makes their gut lining all irritated and things. Now, some kids do really well with it, but there's different choices we can make. Whole milk that is organic or is at least grass-fed. I would say grass-fed is preferable over organic, although mm-hmm. if you can get both, that's best. And then additionally, raw would be my total preference, but it's tricky and expensive sometimes to find the, you know, Goldilocks of all of those situations. Mm-hmm. So, okay. So now getting your cycles back, trying to conceive while breastfeeding, weaning, getting pregnant again. How do we do this? What's happening? So I have to just make a note, which is that your body goes through immense nutrient depletion to get pregnant, make a baby, give birth, feed that baby for the mm-hmm. first however many months or years you do. Mm-hmm. Ideally, we have a gap between weaning and getting pregnant again. Mm-hmm. Ideally, that gap is a minimum of 3 months mm-hmm. or a maximum of however many years you want. But at least a couple of months for your hormones to re-regulate, for all of your nutrition that you stuff in your mouth to go to you and no mm-hmm. one else. Mm-hmm. And for you to maybe have a moment to do some kind of a detox or focus on your health and take things that like you couldn't if you were nursing or pregnant, or to go and have your body back to yourself for just a little while. And maybe you go on a trip or something without your kids.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's benefit to so many of these types of situations before you roll yourself into another multi-year demanding time period.
Yes.
Some people don't have time for that. Some people are in their late 30s and they don't have time and that's okay. Or some people don't want to do that. They want their kids bam, bam, back to back. Some people don't make the choice consciously. They accidentally get pregnant. And on that note, I will say too, is that yes, while you're breastfeeding, you may not have a period at all or a consistent period because of how the hormones are suppressing ovulation. Mm-hmm. But remember, before you see blood, 2 weeks prior to you seeing that blood, you did drop an egg.
Yes.
So if you are having unprotected sperm and vagina sex, you can get pregnant.
Even if you haven't had a period. Yeah.
Yes. At any time, even if you have not had a period yet. So when people say, oh, I'm breastfeeding, I can't get pregnant. It's like, oh, well, are you having sex with your husband and sperm is going into your vagina? Okay. You can totally become pregnant. You mm-hmm. won't know it. You will have no clue that it happened because you'll be shocked until you start having symptoms because you didn't even have a period. You dropped an egg. You got you got pregnant on that first cycle back. Yep. So anyway, just know that. If you're really, really, really trying to prevent pregnancy, you need to have some kind of other method, barrier method or whatever. It can be tricky for the people who aren't wanting to go on hormonal birth control or IUDs or even use condoms. They're normally used to doing family planning. Temperature tracking is really not as a consistent or reliable method when you're breastfeeding, unfortunately, because you're not usually sleeping that 6 to 8 hour necessary solid period for your basal body temperature tracking to be accurate. So
yeah,
I get it. It's tricky. It's really tricky. And condoms are honestly probably going to be the way that to go with that, because if you're trying super hard to avoid.
Yeah, exactly.
So ideally you have a break though, where you fully weaned your baby before you try to get pregnant again. I know some people won't be able to do that. Some people want to tandem breastfeed. So they'll nurse throughout their entire pregnancy and then beyond, and they'll nurse both a newborn and a toddler. Everybody's body is different, and some people can totally manage that beautifully. They're like Mother Goose. They just keep them coming and like nothing happens. And some people are praying mantises like me. And I thought that I was going to be okay with that. And when I got pregnant and was nursing at the same time, it crushed my health for a couple of those weeks. It was really bad. So don't feel like the fact that you can't do it makes you like unhealthy or bad or something. It's just constitutionally, it's so much output. And it's also not ideal. In traditional Chinese medicine, they say an ideal gap is the mom's not getting pregnant again until the youngest is three.
Yeah.
So that's for a, you know, a long period of recovery, because postpartum is 0 to 2 years old. And so it's like, okay, well, but you know, that's not always going to work out for everybody. But I just want to keep it in your mind that if you do have the gap, you have the ability to take some time off in between. It may be the best thing for your health before you dive back in. Mineral stores, nutrient stores, everything, like, unless you're eating super, super well and it's your top priority, which I know a lot of people that are our audience do really want to do that. And still, it's very difficult to.
Yeah. I mean, I eat exceptionally well. Granted, you do. I'm more vata than I like, and I don't absorb all my nutrients like I should. But even I still have nutrient deficiencies, you know, based on labs and things like that, because it's demanding. It's just a demanding process. And the other piece that I want to throw in here of taking a break from weaning, which can be sad, I get, because I'm in the process of doing this exactly right now to give myself 3 months before getting pregnant again, is that that's a window when you can work on your health, such as rebalancing your microbiome, you know, getting rid of bad bacteria that maybe you acquired from taking antibiotics and an planned C-section, or detoxing, you know, because if you do a lot of detox while you're breastfeeding, your baby gets a lot of the toxins that you're dumping. Granted, I've been doing some gentle things while I've been still breastfeeding her once a day, but like, it's maybe not ideal. And so there's a lot of other benefits too that can come with optimizing not only yourself, but also preparing for your next pregnancy, because your microbiome going into your next pregnancy is going to infect your next baby. You know, your detox stores are going to affect your next baby. And there's just a lot that you can't do. There's herbs you can't take. There's stuff that's just more challenging when you're breastfeeding. So, you know, it's the nutrient demands, like you mentioned, that you want to replenish your stores, but also that's a chance for you to kind of reset your body before you get pregnant again.
It's an opportunity that really shouldn't be missed if it can't, if you're in control of it, you know? And like you said something that I was going to comment on, I forget. Like about the detox or about the gut microbiome stuff. I had a patient the other day who we know her stool is all messed up, but she's like a month out and a month postpartum. And it's like, let's not do a stool analysis until we can actually do something about this. And about taking detox herbs or like, you know, getting in the sauna, people ask me all the time, oh, I'm 9 months postpartum. Can I get in the sauna? I know it's pushing detox pathways. I think that 0 to 6 months, we should really try, when you have a 0 to 6 month old, you should really try not to be taking things that will affect your breast milk or your detox pathways in that kind of a way. But still working out and gentle sweating and things like that is fine. It's good for your health. It's and you will be detoxing to some extent. You can't control that. Now pushing it really hard. Let's wait until after that 6 month mark. But I still wouldn't even push it hard then. I would just say it's okay to do like a little bit here and there. Ideally, we're not pushing it hard until we're fully weaned. But yeah, I think like a 9 month postpartum person can get in the sauna a couple times a week. Like that's, it's okay. Like, especially if it's going to be beneficial to you. There is this balance, like what I was kind of mentioning in the beginning of the podcast, which is that we are not in control of our child. It is a dance in a situation that we're doing together with our baby. And there's still always that tenet of we have to put our own mask on first and take care of ourselves. And this is kind of why we're highlighting this, is because in the scheme of motherhood, I know if you want to have multiple kids and it feels like, oh, the gap's going to be too big. In the scheme of motherhood, that couple of months that you took to reprioritize your health is not going to matter in terms of the age gap of your kids. And it can really matter for the way you feel, the way you go into your next postpartum. And now you have two kids to take care of. Mm-hmm. So really just think about it if you can. Family planning is challenging. There's so many factors that go into it. But, you know, we just want to help re-kind of shift the lens to focus back on you and re-prioritizing you. And it's okay. So
yeah,
weaning is all about that. And so that's all I have to say about that. And it's a tricky time closing that chapter of breastfeeding. Really sad. It's really important. Pat on the back for any level of breast milk that you were able to give your baby. It's a whole thing. I have lots of feelings about breastfeeding. And really great job to you. And, you know, peace be with you in this process, because it can be kind of sad and tricky. Look in your baby's eyes and just be present to the moment.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Morgan. You are such a wealth of knowledge. I'm sure everyone is going to be so grateful for this episode.
Oh, I hope so.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Healthy as a Mother podcast. In order for other women to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and send to a friend who could benefit from this content.
We're so excited to share more on becoming and being a mother next time. And remember, a healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.
Please remember that the ideas and views presented in this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to serve as a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis or treatment of any illness or disease. Consult with your provider before integrating this information into your own care plan. Now go have a wonderful day. You've got this.